We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. Woo! Coming a Saturday night after a double overtime Timberwolves win against the Philadelphia 76ers. Final score, Timberwolves 121, Sixers 120. There are a million weird anecdotes I could start talking to you about here. The entire Wolves front court basically fouling out of the game. That very bizarre close to the end of the first overtime. Joel Embiid shooting five more free throws than the entire Wolves team. It was a wild game. I honestly don't even really remember it all as I sit here to record this. But I know the thing to not only acknowledge but focus on here to start tonight is D'Angelo Russell. That was his best game as a Timberwolf, and honestly, maybe the best game of his entire career. Like, yes, he's scored more than 35 points in a game many times before. He scored 35 plus points six times that year. He was an all-star in Brooklyn. But the difference tonight was that it wasn't all offense for him. It wasn't all about buckets, and we've been talking about this. Like, that's been the difference for D'Angelo Russell this season. He's having positive impacts on games this year, even when he isn't getting buckets. Again, he has that insane net rating this year, all season long. You know, coming into tonight, the Wolves have been outscoring opponents by 12.5 points per 100 possessions when he's on the floor. And when he's off the floor, they've been outscored by 12.5 points per 100 possessions. I mean, he's all year been finding other ways to help, even when his shot isn't falling. And it definitely was falling tonight. He had 15 points in the fourth quarter. He was 3 of 5 from 2, 3 of 3 from 3 in that quarter, driving the Wolves to overtime. In the first overtime, he had 8 points, 1 of 2 from 2, 2 of 3 from 3. And then in the second overtime, he scored 4 more big points, where he was 1 of 2 from deep. You know, overall, just in the fourth and those overtimes, D'Lo scored 27 points efficiently, 4 of 7 from 2, 6 of 8 from 3. And he was being this big. Like, Matisse Thybulle is like the poster boy for, you know, perimeter defense. Well, Thybulle was on D'Angelo Russell when D'Lo was going off. But again, I want to point out, it wasn't just the scoring. And it wasn't just that D'Lo was clutch. Like, those were the things that old D'Lo did. This was D'Angelo Russell's best game of his career, in my opinion, because he was playing really good, really smart defense as well. Like, yeah, he made all those buckets. We've seen that before. But the intellect he used to pick off that pass from Tyrese Maxey to Joel Embiid that led to the Torian Prince run out for the layup, like, that was the play of the game. And that was a smart, defensive-minded play that absolutely had nothing to do with getting buckets. I'm just extremely impressed with D'Lo's performance tonight on a night where the Wolves absolutely needed that performance to be able to win the game on the road in Philadelphia. And, you know, Cat felt the same way post game. I thought he summed it up well in his post game comments.
That's the best. That's probably one of the best D'Angelo Russell performances I've ever seen. And listen, I've seen him get 50 against us, but that was the difference between this game and that game. What I just talked to him about is the fact that the defense he played as well as the offense he gave us. I think that, you know, it's so big when you have someone like D'Angelo where, you know, let's be honest, we've all seen him play and it'd be like, all right, we got to take D'Lo out for a defensive sub for this moment. And it came to a point where the game was on the line and me, Finch, and all of us were like, D'Lo's the best person to be in the game right now for defense. That says a lot. That says a lot of his growth as a player, how much he wanted to win. And I mean, it's cold-blooded. He did exactly what he's supposed to do.
It was definitely the D'Angelo Russell show down the stretch of that game, but also, you know, credit to Kat to skip over what Kat did tonight would also, that wouldn't be fair. I think we've spent a lot of time this season kind of harping on some of the things that are different this year with this kind of thinner version of Kat, the things maybe he can't do or isn't doing as often, like dropping 20 pounds this offseason has played a role in Kat rebounding the ball at a career low rate, right? Losing that weight also seems to have come with some cost to Kat not necessarily really being able to bully guys on the interior and really dominate on the block in post-up situations like he used to. He's shooting a career low from two-point range this season. But at the same time, what is clear about this sleeker version of Kat is that he cannot be guarded by traditional centers when he's on the perimeter. He just can't. I mean, we've seen him multiple times torch Jonas Valanciunas, multiple times torch Steven Adams. And, you know, Joel Embiid is definitely a tier ahead of those guys, but kind of in that same hulking center mold. And I just thought it was super encouraging to see Kat do the same things he did to Valanciunas and Adams to Joel Embiid, who is, as a defender, and a tier above those guys. I mean, Kat is just too quick and too much of a shooting threat on the perimeter. His speed makes even a player of Embiid's caliber need to pick their poison. And tonight, yet again, we saw an opponent try and guard Kat with their center, and Kat had 17 first half points without missing a shot. 7 of 7 going into halftime. I mean, I say this every night on the show, but the way to slow down the Wolves, to slow down Kat, is to put a small on him and bring doubles. And yet again, like too late tonight, the Sixers moved to that in the second half. They put Tobias Harris on Kat, let Embiid linger around the rim, like half guarding Vanderbilt or McDaniels. And that's when the Sixers went on their run. You know, we usually talk about that happening in the like a negative context for the Wolves. Like, this is how you stop the Wolves. But I think what I feel like I learned tonight was that he did it against Embiid. So that's just a higher level, which means that if the Wolves do figure out how to counter these small ball defensive things on Kat, like, I think that's the final step in the Wolves becoming that offense that we've been waiting for them to explode to be, because, you know, Kat has capital S solved how to beat being single teamed in the NBA by any center in the league. If Embiid can't do it, like, I don't know what else you really need to see. Like, once the Wolves solve this Kat guarded by smalls things, like, it's a wrap. Like, the Wolves are going to be a top 10 offense because they are starting to figure everything else out around that. It's the last piece of the flow that they need to figure out, because that flow that we've talked about all year, that Finch talks about, the players talk about, like, that's that broken flow at the beginning of the year, like, they're mending that together. Kat, Ant, and D'Lo, you know, they're not really having those flow problems anymore. And I thought Torian Prince had a great quote after tonight's game about how they were kind of fighting themselves at the beginning of the season when they were searching for that flow. And that was what was breaking it up. And tonight, again, with what Kat was able to do in the first half and what D'Lo was able to do in the second half, like, yeah, there's kind of one goes and the other goes, but it's happening in better flow. They're not having flow problems anymore. Here's Prince after the game.
Dorian, about a month ago, you were talking about how this team was kind of looking for flow still offensively. What strides as a group do you think you've made in terms of finding that offensive flow as a group?
I think a lot of people were panicking just because it was within the first 5 to 6, 7 games, our offense wasn't looking so good. You got to realize that we're going against each other for a while. So when it comes to the game time, and now you have to play with, it's a little adjustment period, especially playing against different defenses, different teams. But we're figuring it out. We still have a lot of room to get better, which is a great thing. Our key is just staying locked in defensively every night, doing what we do, sticking to our principles, dictating things on defense, and then in the offense, just happen.
The Wolves are now up to 18th in offensive rating for the season after spending, you know, the first month of the year closer to being a bottom five offense in the league. You're kind of seeing over these past 2 weeks the caliber of team the Wolves can be when they do play offense at a level that matches their defense, the level of their defense all season. Even if we include that Suns loss, right? Once the Wolves got back from LA 13 days ago, you start with that Suns loss. Just in that time, in those 13 days, the Wolves ranked 10th in the NBA on offense and 5th in the NBA on defense. Right? What's the difference there? I mean, the difference is the offense. The top 10 defense all year is what has been keeping the Wolves around 500. But when you couple that high-level defense with this offense, like, the results speak for themselves. The Wolves are 6-2, and even including that Suns loss over the past 13 days. And Prince is right. There's that, and then there's also still another level to get to with this group. They're still figuring some things out. They're starting to figure out that flow. I don't have a question of if they're going to figure out the flow. My questions now are, like, how do you maximize it? We'll take a quick break here because obviously we've got plenty more things to get into from this game. A lot of new developments, a lot of Joel Embiid. Take a quick break and come right back.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, we are back discussing the Wolves' one-point double overtime victory over Joel Embiid and the Philadelphia 76ers on Saturday night. If you watched the game, you saw just how insanely frequent it was that Joel Embiid was getting to the free throw line. And if you didn't watch the game, you're just looking at the box score, you're seeing that Embiid shot 21 free throws while the Wolves as an entire team only shot 16. I mean, I think those of you who listen to the show frequently know I never really spend time talking about the refs. I kind of think it's typically a waste of time. That's an uncontrollable variable that I don't believe is, you know, tilted one way or the other. Typically, I think it balances itself out, so we don't spend a lot of time analyzing it. There's been plenty of times the Wolves haven't got a great whistle this year, And for the sake of the show, you know, I just kind of skip over it because it just is what it is. But tonight, I really did think it was a part of the game. I thought the way Embiid was refereed defined the second half. And not just Embiid, not only how often Embiid was getting there, and that just became a cheat code for the Sixers offense, but also on the other end, it was just how infrequent the Wolves were getting to the line themselves and how they were being officiated that it really stalled out the Wolves offense. Like we talked a little bit about how, you know, Harris switched on to guarding Cat, and so you had Embiid back at the rim. Well now you've got the Wolves players like afraid to attack the rim because one, they're not getting any calls. We see that with Ant all the time, right? Plus you have Embiid back there, and it made it so the only way the Wolves were going to be able to score was to get hot from the perimeter, which they did with D'Angelo Russell. But I mean, if one of those D'Lo threes don't go in anymore, like, and we're talking about why the Wolves lost, like I never want to, would never want to say the Wolves lost because of the referees, but it would have been, you know, the defining reason. So I thought it defined a lot of the game tonight. So we'll let Chris Finch speak his piece here on it. And, you know, I think he had a rightful gripe in this. So here's Finch asked about Embiid after the game.
Maybe asking this way, how tough is it to guard Joel Embiid without fouling?
Well, he's got one of the highest foul draw rates in the league. Just looking here, he went to the line more than our entire team. He gets a lot of whistle.
How do you keep composure when that's happening?
I don't think I was composed. I think I was pretty angry about it all.
I'm definitely acknowledging the fact that it was insane how frequently Embiid got to the line. I mean, he almost fouled out the entire Wolves front court. Cat fouled out of the game in the fourth quarter. Vanderbilt fouled out in overtime. McDaniels fouled out in overtime. Naz Reid even had five fouls in the game. But I'm going to actually take it the other way. I think, like, if we isolate, if we take away the defensive possessions where Embiid drew a foul and there were plenty of Sixers possessions where it wasn't going through Embiid that weren't fouls too. And if we focus on those, like I thought the Wolves did a great job on Embiid. I thought Finch had a great plan for doubling Embiid anytime he caught the ball inside the arc. And I thought the doublers, which was oftentimes Anthony Edwards or Jade McDaniels, I thought they executed getting to the double timely and effectively. I thought the rotations following Embiid, you know, needing to kick out after that double team, I thought the Wolves rotated excellent around that. I mean, you isolate for those Embiid touches, you go watch those possessions, and you will see great Wolves defense. And maybe that's just what this Wolves team, you know, it is becoming. A high IQ defense that really can situationally be great. This game isn't of good rotations, isn't an isolated thing. It's sticking out to me almost every night. They play aggressive and they rotate well. That's this Wolves defensive identity. You know, it's funny, for years I've been covering this team and watching them defend every night and it's broken. And then I turn on these other NBA games and it's just night and day different how those other teams defend, how it looks just watching the game, how different it is. But that's not the case anymore. I mean, I watch the Heat play now and I go, hey, that's kind of what it looks like when the Wolves defense is aggressively switching. Or I watch the Nuggets play and I go, yeah, the Wolves defense kind of looks like that too. You know, it's really taken me a long time here, kind of. I think I blame a little bit of scarring over the years, just being burnt out and not really seeing successful defense almost at all. But I do think the Wolves are becoming a solid to good defensive team, or at least that they can be. And I've found it very encouraging to see them be able to guard tonight on a night when Patrick Beverley was out with an injury and on a night where Josh Okogie didn't have to play at all and they played good defense. I mean, just think about the other years. Like, if a guy like Okogie was out of the rotation, you were like, Well, all right, we're just trying to outscore him. Like, the Wolves have high IQ defensive personnel. You know, shout out Torian Prince. I thought he played well tonight. And they have a pretty deep list of that defensive personnel. They got a group of guys. Which brings me to Leandro Balmaro, who I think we can now add to that list of defenders. I'm going to make Leo tonight's Forgotten Star of the game, brought to you by Forgotten Star Brewery. Balmaro, he was, because he played, he was the first sub into the game tonight for the Wolves. He was D'Angelo Russell's backup. And this was the first time we'd seen Balmaro play non-garbage minutes at all for the Wolves ever. You know, coming into tonight, Balmaro had played 30 minutes this season and all of it was garbage time. But tonight, Balmaro played 17 real rotation minutes. His stat line doesn't pop. He made a layup. He made a free throw. He had 3 points in the night, 3 boards, 1 assist. But he didn't look lost out there. I mean, I think he looked a little bit nervous, which is understandable, but he didn't look like a rookie playing against real men for the first time in his life. And that's because it isn't the first time he's been playing pro hoops. You know, Leo just turned 21, but he's played a lot of meaningful basketball in his life overseas and in the Olympics. And you can tell. Now, we're still very much figuring out his game. You know, who is he going to be? How is he going to play? I think tonight we saw some of the things we've been talking about when we've brought up Balmaro, like that size and speed to be able to be a defender who pressures the ball 94 feet up the floor. But we also saw some of the other things offensively we talked about, like, you know, he's a tepid shooter offensively. If tonight was your first time watching Balmaro, you learned that he's not your typical Euro player who's just out there to space the floor and bomb threes. He's not that at all. He's actually really fast. He's a good athlete. He's a good defender. Balmaro really defies more European stereotypes than he defines. When he isn't even European, but he played in the Euro League last year. But still, I don't want to pretend that I have his game figured out. We're learning. And quite frankly, we still just haven't seen that much of him. So tonight, when Kat was up doing his post game, I asked him about Balmaro. And I thought Kat gave a really interesting player comp. Here's Kat.
For those of us who haven't got a chance to really see him play a lot, could you describe to us what you've seen his game be in practice and in the situations where we haven't got the chance to see him? What can he bring?
I think the best way to explain Leah's explaining to everyone is he's one of those guys. He has no flaws in his game. He's good at everything. He may not be great or a superstar or anything, but he's very good or even good at everything. He has no flaws. He's a very, very, very well-rounded player. He can give you anything you need. You need some shots to go in. He could cause some, make some shots. You need him to play defense at a high level. He could do that, obviously, tonight. You need him to facilitate, lead an offense, get everyone organized and stuff. He could do that. I mean, he's a complete package. He does everything extremely well. And we're very fortunate to have him, especially someone like that who you could trust at any moment to go in. I've looked at him if he could be what Sean Livingston was to the Warriors in their run. I want him to be that for us. I want him to be someone who could come in and just completely take control of the game and do everything well that we need him to do.
I'm kind of mad I didn't come up with that comp myself, because the way I would describe Balmaro offensively is a player who is just as comfortable with his mid-range shot as he is uncomfortable with his three-point shot. And I mean, that's pretty much my recollection of Sean Livingston, like, to a T, and obviously the defense as well. I mean, you can take this for whatever it's worth, because it's just my eye test, but when I go to Timberwolves games, I get there at 4:45, and I go to the court to watch pregame workouts, and that happens to be Balmaro's workout time. So I've seen him work out and shoot with Pablo Prigioni, his player development coach, as much as I've watched any Wolves player this whole year. And some of you might remember in past years me talking a lot about Jarrett Culver's shot, and that was because I got to watch it a lot. Like, Culver's workout time used to be 4:45 too. So I saw all of that over the years. And what I'll say with Balmaro is that watching him shoot, you can just really tell where he's comfortable from. And my takeaway from watching him is just that the added distance to the NBA 3 has, like, definitely been an adjustment for him. You can tell he really needs to, like, launch the ball to get it to go 24 feet. So, yeah, like, is that a little bit concerning? Sure. But it also kind of makes sense, right? Like, he was shooting at a shorter distance from three every year of his career before this. And also, to that end, it kind of makes sense that his corner threes look more natural, but the corners are 2 feet closer. I mean, I'm not sitting there like tallying makes and misses when he's doing his pregame workouts, but I can tell you that the corner threes go in a lot more often than the above the break ones do. So I think, you know, however you want to look at it, glass half full, like, maybe he's finding that range. That's going to take a little bit of time, but he's going to find it. And even glass half empty, I think what's encouraging to me is that I can still see a useful player if he is someone who is just a mid-range guy, who is just a corner guy to start. I mean, we'll see. It's going to be, the proof will be in the pudding. But tonight, I thought it was really encouraging to see confidence in his overall game tonight. And really, that's the biggest difference between Leandro Bolmaro and Jarrett Culver. So Leandro Bolmaro is in his first real game as a Timberwolf. He is tonight's forgotten star of the game. And I look forward to learning more about Bolmaro's game as we see him play more. I see no reason that he wouldn't be in the rotation this entire time that Patrick Beverley's out. Forgotten Star Brewery is located in Fridley, Minnesota. They give listeners to this show $1 off beers if you mention the show. So if you're looking for a new brewery, check out Forgotten Star, open 7 days a week at noon. We'll wrap up a couple other notes on tonight's game, kind of going through my prize picks. I took the over on D'Angelo Russell points tonight and the under on D'Lo assists. My thinking here was that this was going to be a game where D'Lo has to be an offensive creator creating his own shot. We've kind of seen in a lot of games this year, like when he's getting his 20+, his assist numbers normally are down a little bit more. You know, it's picking one of the two. I thought this would be a night where he'd be able to get his 20 for sure, because we know D'Lo can cook drop coverage, right? And that's what the Sixers run. So he hit the over on 18.5 points there for D'Lo, but he also went over 6 assists, finished the night with 8, I believe. So I missed that one. The other pick I was wrong about was Jared Vanderbilt over 6.5 points. My thinking there was that there would be a little bit more offensive usage for Vanderbilt tonight, or just overall more minutes, because when I did these picks, it was trending in the direction toward Cat not playing in the game. Vanderbilt, I still think he had a good game. He had 14 rebounds, but only ended up scoring 5 points in the night. And per usual, his impact was more felt on the glass. The other pick I got right to go 2 for 2 was, I think this is an interesting thing to kind of monitor going forward. I picked over 6 points for Danny Green tonight, because what we've been seeing lately in these past few games is that smart 3-point spacers are effectively kind of moving into the gaps around the 3-point arc. That's kind of what the Wolves perimeter defense allows right now. We saw Duncan Robinson punish that in the Miami game. We saw Kelly Oubre also do that in the Charlotte game. And Danny Green did tonight, too. He made 3 threes, scored 11 points on the night. So as we kind of think about Indiana on Monday, like, I kind of, you know, what's that going to look like for Justin Holiday in spacing the floor? Because I think, like some of the other things with the Wolves on offense and on defense, once the film gets out there a little bit, I think the opposing coaches know how to kind of wiggle their way into some of those crevices. And I think what they're learning is if they have their perimeter shooters rotating along the perimeter towards the weak side, there's going to be a lot of open looks there. Again, that's what Robinson, Oubre, and Danny Green have been able to do these past 3 games. So overall, that's 2-2 on the night, which gets us to 35-37-2 on the season with my prize picks. If you're not yet playing Prize Picks and you're listening to this, you know, join the group. Many of you have made Prize Picks accounts and have been wagering on the overs and unders there that they post, not just for Wolves games, but for, you know, all the NBA games, all NFL, whatever, everything. It's all there for daily fantasy, just in set up stats with over unders. Many of you have also gotten a free $100 in a sign up bonus when you have created a Prize Picks account. You can do that. You get your $100. I mean, if you're going to sign up, you know, you might as well take the $100. Use promo code Dane when you do make that account. If you're already have created a Prize Picks account, I appreciate You guys doing that. Thank you. Get your friends to play along with you as well. Just download the Prize Picks app. Use promo code Dane for $100 extra when you sign up. That's about all I got for you tonight. The Wolves are now 10-10, which is the same record as the Sixers. And next up is the Pacers on Monday. I appreciate you all being patient with no pods at the end of this last week. I was out of town for Thanksgiving, so I obviously missed that Wolves Heat game. I watched it after the fact. Was bummed I didn't get to talk to you all about that one. Just bummed I wasn't there. The game, it looked like a blast. But we've still got 62 more Wolves games this season. Plenty more Wolves to talk about. And we'll do that starting on Monday. Back in the routine. I'll be back after Monday's game. And then I'll have Britt for you on Tuesday. I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. And I'll talk to you in a few days. Until then, I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around, yeah.